listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rockland, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hi there. Welcome to the Dr. Nina Show. I am your host, Dr. Nina Savelle Rockland, and I am a psychoanalyst specializing in eating disorders, especially binge eating, the most prevalent eating disorder there is, by the way. And I am here to help you break free from binging, emotional eating, body shame, and diets that don't work. I want you to wake up and think about your day, not your diet. If you'd like to call in today with any questions, the number here is 323-203-0815. Hi, Janine. It's good to see you on Instagram. We're also live streaming on Instagram. So if you want to go over there and ask me a question or say hi like Janine just did, you are welcome to do so at dr.nina.psychoanalyst. If you'd like to call in with questions, the number is 323-203-0815. I would love to hear what is on your mind, because the real problem with binge eating, stress eating, any kind of emotional eating, the real problem is not food. It is not what you're eating that is the problem. It's what's eating at you. So the key to change is to focus on those underlying reasons, that the why you're eating, not the what you're eating. And when you do that, change happens for good. So give me a call and let's figure out a way to help you banish binging for good. All right, so today, my topic is five common mistakes about binge eating at night. A lot of people think they know how to stop binge eating at night, and a lot of what we think we know are actually misconceptions. So I'm going to correct those mistakes so that you know what it actually takes to stop binge eating at night or any time. So if you're like most people, you might find yourself overeating or binging at night. Maybe you have a few too many snacks while you're watching TV. Maybe you decide to have a few bites of ice cream and you end up finishing the entire carton. Nighttime binge eating can be a real problem. Not only can it lead to, of course, weight gain, which a lot of people are worried about, but it can also disrupt your sleep. It leaves you feeling grouchy the next day. And worst of all, it makes you feel terrible about yourself. It actually affects your self-esteem. So we want to change that. Now, by the way, I think it's really important to point out this. Overeating is different from binge eating. A lot of times people will tell me, oh, I binged last night. And I say, well, what did you binge on? And they say, well, I ate like four cookies. That's not a binge. That's just normal eating. But let's say they ate six cookies. Okay, maybe that's slightly overeating. Other people will say they binged last night, and they'll say they ate 40 cookies. Yeah, that's a binge. So overeating means eating to excess, just eating too much. And it's something we all do at one time or another. And when we overeat, we shrug it off. We're not too bothered by it. We say, I ate too much. Oh, well, I'll cut back at the next meal or maybe do an extra, lap of running around the track or whatever it is. Overeating isn't a big deal, and it doesn't impact the way we feel about ourselves. Binging is different. Binging means eating large quantities of food at one time, often compulsively, and without enjoyment. Like maybe you enjoy the first few bites, but then it doesn't feel good. It's like torture. You hate that you're doing it and you just can't stop. And you may be asking yourself, why am I doing this? Why can't I stop? This is crazy. This is ridiculous. What's wrong with me? Well, I'm going to set the record straight about that. Binging is about being out of control with food. It involves a great deal of shame, remorse, self-recrimination. You totally beat yourself up. it negatively impacts your sense of self, your self-esteem, and, you know, it makes you feel bad about yourself. So not only do you feel bad about what you ate, but you feel bad about you. So how can you stop nighttime binging, which is when a lot of people have the problem with binging? They're good all day, good, quote unquote, good. And then at night, everything falls apart. So let's take a look at some of the common mistaken beliefs that people have when it comes to binge eating at night, as well as the truths about those mistaken beliefs. So the first mistake is thinking that if you eat more during the day, you won't binge at night. And the idea behind this belief is that if you eat enough to satisfy yourself during the day, you won't get as hungry at night. And then if you're not ravenous at night, you're not going to find yourself heading to the kitchen and eating everything in sight, finding whatever is in the fridge, in the pantry, ordering something on DoorDash, whatever. In other words, if you're not hungry, you won't binge. So here's the truth. Binging is not about physical hunger. It can be at some times, but it is not the main reason why people binge. And by the way, eating enough during the day will help you not overeat, but it will not help you stop binging. Here's why. Binging is not about physical hunger. It's just not about physical hunger. Emotional eating, which binge eating is a form of, has to do with your hungry heart, not your stomach. And again, it's true. If you don't eat enough during the day, you may get hungrier at night. That doesn't correspond to binging. A lot of people have like a wonderful meal with the family or out with friends or by themselves or whatever, they have a meal and then boom, 30 minutes later, an hour later, they're in the kitchen. They're not hungry. It has nothing to do with physical hunger. It has to do with something else. When we eat to resolve or manage our emotions, when we eat to distract, to numb, to comfort, even in some cases to celebrate, you know, we're eating for emotional reasons. When we eat to assuage physical hunger, we stop when we're full. So binge eating is about using food to change the way you emotionally feel. It doesn't matter whether you're hungry at night or not, right? When's the last time you binge just because you were hungry? Usually it's a hungry heart, not a hungry stomach. So that's mistake number one. Mistake number two is thinking that if you practice mindful eating, you won't binge. Hey, I'm all in favor of mindful eating. That's great. However, it won't stop a binge. Mindful eating, what is mindful eating? We use the word mindful and mindfulness a lot. What does it actually mean? So mindful eating means sitting down to eat and really paying attention to what you are eating, noticing the taste, the texture, the smell of your food, and enjoying it. So the idea behind the belief that if you eat mindfully, you won't binge, the belief is that if by eating slowly and appreciating food more, you won't overdo it or overeat or binge. Here's the truth. Here's why mindful eating will not help you stop binge eating. The truth is, binging is about going mindless. It's about putting yourself into the zone, the numb zone, the comfort zone, the I'm not feeling anything zone, except maybe self-hatred. The purpose of binging is to escape our minds. And, you know, over the years, many of my patients and clients in my coaching program, they describe like a feeling of being disconnected or dissociated from themselves when they binge. I've heard it called the dead zone, the numb zone. Back when I was the poster child for eating disorders, when I would go through the binge eating cycle or the binge and purge cycle, I would just, it was like someone pressed a switch in my mind and it was just shut off. I didn't feel anything except, you know, I was mad at myself. I was just in this zone. And that's what so many people describe. It's a real sense of being dissociated from your mind, your thoughts, your feelings. And the unconscious goal of binge eating, hear this, the unconscious goal of binge eating is actually to escape from psychological pain. So focusing on mindful eating, which is focusing on what you're eating and enjoying it, it will not be effective. Mindful eating is a good practice when it comes to normal eating, but it is ineffective as a strategy to stop binge eating because it puts the focus on what you are eating instead of why. And the why is everything. Why you're eating is, that's everything. Often it's the hidden why, which just makes things a little more difficult. But difficult doesn't mean impossible. All right. So mistake number three is trying to distract yourself with other things at night. So the idea here is that if you are feeling the urge to binge at night, you can distract yourself with some other like healthy activity, an activity that is healthy and less destructive, maybe even proactive. You can call a friend, you could read a book, you could watch a movie, you can even brush your teeth. These are the things that I've heard people recommend. Well, if you occupy your mind with other things, the idea goes, you won't binge at night. But it's kind of akin to saying, well, just don't think about it. Just don't feel that. Oh, just drop that. Just positive think it away. Just be grateful. Then you won't feel that. Well, guess what? You can't ignore feelings. You can't drop them. You can't positive think them away. You can't gratitude them away. You can't stuff them and you can't starve them away. The only thing that you can do is pay attention to them. So here's the truth. What you feel, you will heal. One of my clients once said, hey, if I brush my teeth, and that worked as well as binging, I would have the whitest teeth in America, maybe the world. So chances are you've already tried distracting yourself from painful or upsetting emotions by doing something else. Sure you have, you've tried. And chances are it didn't work in the long run. And that is because ultimately the only way to get rid of feelings is to experience them, is to feel them. And that does not mean sitting in your feelings until they magically disappear. You can't sit away your feelings either. And I don't even know what that means, sitting in your feelings. So feeling your feelings means identifying your emotions, expressing them in some way, like journaling or talking to a trusted friend or a therapist or someone in one of my groups, my Facebook community, Dr. Nina's Food for Thought community, great place to express yourself. You can go there. And it also means responding to yourself with validation and comfort. So first you identify what you're feeling, then you express what you're feeling, and then you respond to yourself. And those are the steps to feeling your feelings. You can't think away your feelings either. And by the way, identifying them is not feeling them. A lot of people say, well, I recognize I was really sad and nothing happened. As my kid used to say, no, duh. When she was like five, I don't know. She went through a big no, duh phase. And she would be mortified if she knew that I was sharing that. So no, It doesn't work, because going, I'm sad, is not the same as being sad. And the only way to stop being sad is to be sad. It sounds counterintuitive, but identifying your emotion is just thinking it. Oh, I realize what's going on with me. I realize I'm sad. That is very different from saying, oh, this really breaks my heart. Maybe shedding a tear or two, or, you know, shoulder shake, sob, or however you express sadness. So many of us think that we are expressing our feelings when in fact we are only identifying them. First identify, then express, then respond. Okay, mistake number four when it comes to nighttime binging, to stopping nighttime binging, mistake number four is thinking that if you sleep more, you will binge less. It is true that a lack of sleep can lead to increased hunger for various reasons having to do with hormones that I won't get into. And it is also important for many, many health reasons to get enough sleep. And hey, if you're getting 7 or 8 hours a night, that is ideal for optimal health. Personally, I can't even imagine getting 7 or 8 hours of sleep. I got to work on that. But that's the ideal, at least 7 or 8 hours a night. But getting enough sleep will not stop you from binging, because sleep has to do with physicality, not with psychology. So here's a truth. Sometimes when we're tired, the idea is that if you're tired, you're gonna eat to for energy and to wake up, and to, you know, that's gonna turn into a binge. And it is true that some people do eat chocolate or sugary things to stay awake or give themselves a little pep later in the day. And that is not a good strategy, because when we are tired, we need rest, not sugar. But eating or even overeating sugary foods is different from binging, which again is about resolving something internal, something emotional, some conflict, something going on inside in your head, in your heart, not in your body. So binging is a way of resolving emotional conflicts or escaping from them temporarily. Your level of exhaustion has very little to do on whether you binge. Okay, and here's the big one. I saved it for last. Mistake number five. Avoiding trigger foods will help you stop nighttime binging. This is something lots of people believe, that the only way to avoid binging at night is to avoid certain foods, or even avoid having them in the house. Getting rid of tempting foods from your house, or just, you know, avoiding the kitchen altogether after dinner. So goes this belief. Those are two strategies to not binge. So if you don't have the food in your house and you don't go into the kitchen at night, you're not going to binge. That's the idea. Here's the truth. There are no trigger foods. Yes, you heard that right. There are no trigger foods. There are only trigger situations. With binge eating, food is not actually the trigger, although it definitely feels like it's the trigger. I get it. It feels like you're triggered by food, for sure. But the real trigger is something uncomfortable, painful, or upsetting that you don't want to think about. And binging is a way of coping with those triggers. It is a solution, actually, to the real trigger, which are the underlying thoughts, conflicts, emotions, whatever's going on inside that feels icky, that we want to avoid. So instead of using willpower to avoid certain foods, consider whether you are using food to resolve something emotional. Are you comforting yourself? Distracting yourself? Are you symbolically filling a void? Because when we have voids in our lives, that feels like emptiness, and we can eat to fill that void symbolically. Works in the moment, but certainly not in the long run. Or cope with something in your life. Are you mad at something or someone and you don't feel comfortable even knowing you're mad or expressing your anger or anything along those lines, but oh, you can sure displace that anger onto yourself for binging. And that happens a lot. People say like, oh, I'm not an angry person. I would never be angry at so-and-so. I understand why so-and-so did that or didn't do that or said that or whatever the case. I get it, so I don't have a right to be angry. And besides, you know, I don't do anger. Anger's not nice. And then what they typically say is, oh my God, but I am so mad at myself because I can't believe I ate that and I got in the scale and I hate myself. I'm disgusting. You can't be angry at someone else, but oh, it's really easy to be angry at yourself. Does that sound familiar? If so, you want to normalize anger as just a reaction to a situation, not a character flaw, and allow yourself to express that, not necessarily to the person that you're mad at, but sometimes you can't. Sometimes situations happen, we can't say, hey, COVID, I want to sit down and talk with you. You've really disrupted my life. No, we can't do that. But we still may feel angry, resentful. Got to process that, get it out. And also, helplessness, right? A lot of times we feel helpless. COVID is a great example. We feel powerless over things in our lives. We're helpless. There's nothing we can do about certain people or situations. And so we often take that helpless feeling. And instead of saying, oh, this is the worst. I feel so helpless. I feel terrible. Oh, of course I feel this way. How could I not? But, you know, I'm doing what I can to focus on the things I can deal with and control in my life. This will pass. Right now it sucks, but I'm going to get through it. I've been through tough things before. I'm going to get through this again. No, no, no. You don't say that. You might be displacing helplessness to food. So instead of, oh my gosh, I'm so helpless over this situation. It feels terrible. It becomes, oh, I'm so powerless over food. Food has such power over me. I'm helpless when it comes to whatever it is that's in the kitchen that's pulling me in there like a magnet. When you get really curious about why you are turning to food instead of focusing on what you are eating, everything changes when you work through that. So as you can see from these myth-busting, you know, truths that I've shared today, binging at any time of the night or day isn't really about food. It's a way of coping with something unpleasant and difficult and has nothing to do with food, really. It's just expressed through food. But it ultimately has to do with what's eating at you and not what you are eating. And by the way, if you have trouble identifying what it is that is eating at you, and a lot of people do because we get so quick at turning to food, we don't even know we're getting triggered. We don't even know what our true feelings are, what our true needs are. We have no clue. Well, that is why I created the food mood formula secret. I'm sharing it, so it's not such a secret anymore. You can get it at my website, or if you're on Instagram, just go to the link in my bio and download your copy of the Food Mood Formula Secret, which will help you identify exactly what is going on with you, so that then you could, that's the first step, right? And then you can express that and start responding to it. And if you don't know how to do that, just keep listening to my show, because these are the things that I talk about every week. So again, focusing on food really is the worst thing you can do. Dieting makes you focus on food. Right? And whether you call that an eating plan or a food program or an app that might begin with a letter that shares my name. No, that's a diet. That is a diet. focusing on food just keeps you from identifying and working through the true reasons that you are binging. And it keeps you from learning to respond to yourself in a kind, loving, and nurturing way. So the key to stop binging at night is to identify your true triggers, to learn how to express those emotions, and finally, to soothe yourself with words. So that is that. If anyone has any questions, I'm happy to answer them. If you're on Instagram, feel free to drop a comment or a question in the box. Otherwise, I have more questions from other people. But before that, I just want to share, this is from the New York Times, Roxane Gay, who wrote a really remarkable book called Hunger. If you don't have it yet, I recommend you read it. She has a weekly column in the Sunday New York Times. And here's a question that someone wrote in, which I just thought I want to share with you because I think you need to hear it. I think everyone needs to hear it. This person wrote in, she has a column called Work Friend. So the person wrote in, the question is, I finished grad school recently and I just started a new corporate job. However, I'm really nervous about needing to tell my supervisors and coworkers that I need to leave work for an hour each week to go to therapy. Although I see my therapist in the evening, this is a really demanding salary position. It's not uncommon to have to work until late in the evening to complete a project. If I don't disclose the true reason I need to step out, I'm worried I might be asked to stay at work and miss my therapy sessions. If I do disclose why I need to leave, I'm concerned I might face a stigma for going to therapy. Isn't it sad that there's still a stigma for going to therapy? Therapy is not that you're broken and you go to someone to be fixed. Therapy is a beautiful opportunity to get to know yourself in a deeper way and change the way you relate to yourself, which changes how you feel in the world with other people and with food. But I digress. The person says, my company claims it's progressive, but I have learned to be wary of large corporations. Do you have any tips on how I should handle the situation? And the reason I want to share this question with you is because of Roxane Gay's answer. She says, you don't need to explain why you need 1 hour a week away from the office. Just tell your supervisor you need an hour of personal time each week and that you'll return to the office after your personal time as needed. And good for you for making time to go to therapy. I go twice a week. It's blocked off in my calendar, so my staff knows I am unavailable. The appointment we must keep for ourselves, the appointments we must keep for ourselves are as important as any others. That is so important to hear. The appointments we must keep for ourselves is as important as any others, sometimes more important. Often we give so much away. Right? We take care of other people. We're there for our friends, our kids, our parents, our siblings, our neighbors, our whoever, right? We're there for other people. And we give and we give and we give and we give and we empty ourselves out and we deplete ourselves. But what's coming in? Often people can't even take in a compliment. They can't even take in acknowledgement. The only one thing that they can take in is literally and symbolically food. So it's really important to practice self-care. This is, and what does self-care mean anyway? That's another one of those words or expressions that we talk about all the time, but what does it mean? So a lot of times when I talk about self-care, what I hear back is, oh, that's selfish. That is selfish. If I take care of myself and I don't take care of that person, I can't do that. Actually, you can. Back to the often used oxygen metaphor, when you get on a plane and the flight attendants say, hey, if the oxygen masks drop, put them on yourself, parents. Don't put them on your kids, because you are no good to anybody else if you don't have enough oxygen. And in this case, oxygen is a great metaphor for your needs and wants. Having what you need and want in life is so crucially important, vitally important. If you are not fulfilled and gratified, you might use food for that purpose. You might feel bad and empty, symbolically fill the void with food. You might just take in food as the only thing that's yours that you can have. So it's so important to recognize that self-care is not selfish. So there's a big difference between being selfish. Selfish is, it's all about me. I don't care about you. Selfless is, it's all about you. I don't care about me. I will set myself on fire to keep you warm. Both two extremes, neither of which is good. In between is self-care, which is, I'm going to make sure that I meet my needs. Sometimes I'm going to meet my needs first and then yours. Sometimes I'm going to meet your needs and then mine. But I'm going to weigh whether I need to take care of myself here or not. And I'm going to recognize that taking care of myself means that I'm actually more available to others. But I'm filled. I'm not empty. Self-care is actually a gift to yourself and the best thing that you can give for yourself. Because also, if you don't take care of yourself, who will? Oh, shoot. I just saw that a caller was on and I never saw that. I have to be better at looking at Sam. I'm so sorry. Like 6 minutes ago. Anyway, caller, if you hear this and you want to call back, please, I'm looking at the monitor so I know that there's a caller there. I got so immersed in what I was saying. So,
hello.
Caller on. You're back.
Dr. Nina?
Hi, hello, caller.
It's Jenny.
Hi, Jenny. I am so sorry. I just didn't even that there's a call waiting.
No worries. No worries.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I hear you. Can you hear me? Hello?
I hear you perfectly.
Oh, great. Okay.
I hear you perfectly.
You're cutting in and out just a tiny bit. That's why I didn't hear that last thing that you said. But I've been listening to your show, and it's funny that you, I tried calling earlier, but now you're talking about, taking care of yourself, and it's kind of why I was calling. I was calling in for some moral support, because I'm feeling a bit hopeless. I think I've called in a couple times about my mother and her anxiety. Yes.
And her leaning on you excessively.
Yeah. And she turns to me for therapy sessions, almost, it seems. And every day it's a new issue or fear, and I'm exhausted trying to console her. And she never really asks me how I'm doing. And it's very deflating, honestly.
Of course it is. It sounds very upsetting that you have to be the ear and the shoulder and the recipient and the therapist to your own mother, who isn't interested in anything reciprocal. And I do know from your previous calls that, and as you just said, you're a parentified child, meaning you grew up taking care of your parents. And now you have to take care of your parents, and they still have not taken care of you, which is very painful and upsetting. So here's the thing. This is going to sound like a non sequitur, but I have a point. So bear with me.
Yeah.
So I remember being, I think it was Target. I was in Target and some little kid wanted some candy. And the kid's like, "Mom, can I have candy?" And the mom's like, "No, we're having lunch. We'll have candy another time. This is not the time for candy." The kid's like, "I want candy." Mom's like, no candy. "I want candy. I want candy. I want candy." Gets on the floor and does a full on tantrum. And finally, what does the mom say? After saying, "Get up, you're not getting candy. This isn't going to work on me." Guess what she said? "Okay, you can have candy." So what did that little kid learn? That if they just make enough noise and keep doing it, the other person's going to cave.
Yeah.
So how this relates to you is that if you gratify your mom all the time, she's not going to change.
Yeah.
The only way to help her help herself, and more importantly, stop reaching out to you and you know, sucking the life and the energy and the time out of you.
Yeah.
Any mutuality is to set boundaries.
Yeah. And some days I'm really strong and I'm like, I gotta go, you know, and I, you know, go on my merry way and don't think about it. And other days I feel horrible guilt. Or,
what do you think you're doing wrong? What are you doing to her?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Why do you feel guilty? Why do you feel guilty?
I don't know why I feel guilty. I think it's something that, I think it's because of her tone. She makes me feel like I'm not there for her. And not even tone. Sometimes she will actually say, "I feel like you're abandoning me," or "I feel abandoned. I'm all alone." You know, she's manipulative in that way. And, you know, she's older. She's an older woman. She's a senior. And, you know, I think to myself, all right, well, I don't know how much longer she has. I'll be nice to her today, you know, even though I have my own stuff to do. And, you know, I don't know. I take it day by day sometimes with her because I just don't know what to do.
Okay. So Jenny, what I hear is, and I have another thought about this, by the way, other than the guilt coming from what she's actually saying. First of all, look up borderline personality disorder, look up borderline personality disorder waif, just see if that might resonate with you.
Okay.
Secondly, it is interesting that as soon as she says you're abandoning her, it's like you align with her and you forget all the times that you have been there for her, all the times that you talk to her, all the energy you put into her. It's almost like that gets wiped out and you identify with her instead of with yourself. So make sure that you really take your own side. And when she says, "I feel abandoned," know that you have not abandoned her. You are showing up for her, and I've shown up for her. What's the reality? Just because she feels abandoned doesn't mean she is being abandoned. So question her assessment of the situation. But here's what I'm wondering. Because you were a parentified child, that actually means in some ways she abandoned you. She didn't take care of you the way you needed to be taken care of. Right?
Oh, of course. And that's so interesting when she says to me that, I think, okay, talk about the pot calling the kettle black. I can't, you know, talk to her about these things. She has a whole different view, you know, of
her view is
parenting than I did. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, of course. But here's what I'm getting at. So you cannot bear to be the rejecting one or the abandoning one because you were abandoned. So I wonder if sometimes unconsciously you feel guilty because you feel like you're being the abandoning person, and then you become the bad mother and she becomes you in your psyche. It's, these are, These are unconscious, right? It's not like you're going, okay, I'm my mother. My mother is me. I can't be that. But that's what can happen. Does that resonate?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, completely.
Yeah.
So what's the solution? I mean, you've told me before to kind of, I don't, kind of, you know, kindly step away, you know, when, you know, she's doing things like that. But how do I curb the guilt?
Well, because you remember that the guilt is based on either what she's telling you, which you're taking as reality.
Yeah.
You've abandoned me. So what if you've talked to me for the last 1,000 days? You're not spending as much time with me today. So you've abandoned me. You know, that recognize to stay with what is. And when you feel like you're abandoning her, challenge that. Stay with what is, which is reality and what you know to be true. And just use facts. She feels abandoned, yet I talk to her every day and she's feeling abandoned because I skipped a day or I'm not giving her as much time as she wants. And she's not recognizing that, you know, she's not asking anything about you she's just like sucking the life out of you so one thing is with the guilt to say, is this really my guilt? Or is this her guilt about being a mother who takes too much from her daughter and doesn't give? Is this really my guilt? Because what do I have to feel guilty about? I've done this, and this, you know? And is it really a bad thing to set a boundary? No. The other thing that I would do is I would stop giving her input or solutions. So if she says, I don't know to do about this or this or this. I just don't know what to do. You say, instead of, well, you could do this, you could do that, you could do this, you could do that, which I'm guessing maybe is what you're doing.
Yeah.
Okay. Don't do that, Jenny.
Yeah.
Here's what you say.
Okay.
You're a smart woman. I'm confident that you'll figure it out.
Mm. Okay.
If it's medical, you know, I think you should ask your doctor. I don't have my MD after my name, so I really can't give you input. I think you should ask your doctor. Yeah.
Got it.
So just, right, do not, because otherwise, I'm sure she's never been like, oh, thank you. That's such a great idea. Now I'm going to do it. And then she does it. Has that ever happened?
No.
No. So it's not going to happen because she's using this as a way to get engagement with you. And as long as you engage with her on her terms, now you're going to feel guilty and bad about yourself instead of protecting yourself, feeling sad that you have a mom who can't mother you and makes you into her mom. And heal from that wound.
Yeah. Yeah, this all makes sense. Just have to implement it. Thank you, Dr. Nina. I really appreciate you listening.
You're welcome. And just one more thing.
Sure.
You know my love of Star Wars. And you know my love of acronyms. So you might know my JEDI acronym, which stands for Do Not Justify, Explain, or Defend the I. Don't justify, explain, or defend yourself. So if she says, you never call me, you're not there for me. Don't justify, explain, or defend. Say, it's sad that you feel that way. I gotta go. Do not.
Got it.
Or what makes you say that? No, don't even go there. Just say, that's troubling that you would feel that way, but I really have to go. I'll talk to you later. Just boundaries.
Yeah, boundaries. Got it. I know it's so hard not to be defensive when you know you do all you can and someone, you know, kind of pushes you. Like it takes a lot of takes a lot of self discipline.
Well, you're laughing, Jenny, but it's a painful situation. You know, it is.
And you got frustrating and ugh.
Yes. And expressing that frustration and sadness is really key as well.
Yeah, it makes me feel better to like let it out because it boils inside of me for sure.
Yeah. And
well, thank you, Janine. I appreciate you listening, and I hope I didn't bore your other listeners with stories of my mother.
Oh my gosh, wait a minute. You're not going anywhere, Jenny. First of all, every time bored, mm-hmm. Instagram, tell me what you tell. Give Jenny some love, because that was not boring. Your feelings are never boring. Your situation is never boring. If something is bothering you, it needs your attention, not your condemnation. And by the way, in the past, when you've been on, I've had people message me and say, I could so relate to that caller with the mother. So many people can relate to having a parent that isn't there for them and that they have to be there for. What you're talking about, yeah, you're not alone in this. It's, Janine is saying that she learned a lot and thanked you for sharing, because lots of people have really difficult parents and don't know how to deal with that. Because the other part of this is you coming to terms with this mother who's not a mother, who's like a mother who's not a mom. Like a mom calls you and says, how are you doing? Tell me about you. I want to hear everything. A mother is the relationship. But when you have a mother that's not a mom or a father that's not a dad, it's very painful. And she's also saying, I can relate to that kind of mom with a heartbreak emoji. You are not alone. And also, if you're going through something, what's boring about your feelings? They need your attention, and you need to be there for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just feel like I'm constantly talking about my mother, and it's just like, I'm sick of talking about my mother.
you'll finish. It's not like there's some like a magical number of times that you can talk about the same thing. And it's like, I'm sorry, you talked about that one too many times. No, you talk about it.
You're going to be cut off soon.
Talk about it over and over and over and over again until it is resolved.
Yeah. Thank you to your callers for making me feel like I'm not alone, because it is. Sometimes you do feel alone. Like, why am I the only one that has a crazy mother?
You are not the only one with a crazy mother, difficult mother, an unmaternal mother, a mother who takes but doesn't give, a mother who's like neglectful, self-absorbed. You aren't, because mothers are just people.
Yeah.
And when you have a mother like that, and you know you don't have a mom that you want, it's painful. It's frustrating. It's upsetting. And that's important to recognize, so that you can show up for yourself, not accuse yourself of being boring, but to say to yourself, yeah, this is hard. It's hard to have this person as my mother. It's hard on me. Like, be there for you. You wouldn't say that to a friend, would you? If you had a friend with a difficult situation and the situation was constant in their life, you wouldn't say, oh, you, that again? If that person was really
of course. Trying. You're right. I'm hard on myself, for sure. Yeah, I would never say that to a friend. And I would totally relate, obviously.
Yes. So, if you wouldn't say it to a friend, do not say it to yourself.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you for calling, Jenny, and good luck with these strategies.
Thank you. Talk to you soon, hopefully.
Okay. I hope so. Bye for now.
Okay, bye-bye.
Oh, my heart goes out to Jenny. It's really hard to be in that situation. And if you're in a situation that is hard for you, be sure to talk to yourself as you would a friend. Be kind to yourself. Be nurturing. Be loving. You deserve it. So if you enjoyed some of the things that I was talking about today, you can find more like this in my book, The Binge Cure, 7 Steps to Outsmart Emotional Eating. It is available on Amazon in paperback, hardcover, Kindle, and audiobook. I read it to you. So head on over to get that when you get a chance. And I'm here every Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific. Join me live, or you can always listen later. Check out the Dr. Nina Show on LA Talk Radio, on Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get podcasts. I'll see you next week.
You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.